Hey everyone, I'm Alex Cantor.
And I'm Lily Rosenthal.
Welcome to our podcast, Hot Pastrami.
We are coming to you from our favorite booth at Cantor's Deli here in LA.
We're going to invite some of our friends to join us for a chat over some matzo ball soup and pastrami sandwiches.
So join us for new episodes of Hot Pastrami every week on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you listen to podcasts. See you soon. Bye.
Well, the weekend's over, so it's time to chat about it. Podcast during lunch, dinner, or breakfast. Brad Williams and Adam Ray are here for you any time of the day. So come on and treat yourself right. It's about last night.
The color is as good as anybody, but it's still a talk show, like commercial breaks, get on a roll, and
yeah,
you feel like a dancing monkey.
That is kind of the downfalls of terrestrial radio and talk shows, where you can't like really go into it.
Right.
Like you say, like you get on a roll. It's like, great, we're having fun now. And, yeah. And we'll be right back after these messages. And then you just
Have to
stop.
Dealing with a TV audience pumped up, your friends, the host. Mm-hmm. You've been pumped up by the segment producer. So you're trying to get to stuff. And then everyone, the pressure starts to build. You're going to kill, man. You're going to destroy. Yeah. And then people think it's an actual conversation.
Yeah.
And it's a performance.
Yes.
It is.
This is a conversation.
Yes.
Yeah.
So
hence all the lack of views, old wise one. Let's check the metrics. Hard to get traction. No, but you know, it's just, no one sees anything anymore, so I don't really care as much about any individual thing. I lie to all my friends. But, I have friends like you, and you guys do TV and stuff.
Yeah.
And I must have lied to you by now. Oh, I saw your thing. It's great. I did see it, but probably the first 2 minutes, like a book.
Yeah.
And then the last minute.
Yeah. That's all you need to see, though.
Yeah.
I lie all the time.
People should start giving out their highlight reels for life. That way it's like, but I guess Facebook kind of does that, right?
Yeah.
Facebook will kind of do like a year in review.
Yeah, and they kind of go like, hey, here's all the stuff you did. And you did this post about when you did the longest poop you've ever had in your life. And that got more likes than anything you've ever done in your career. So let's celebrate that again. And you're like, fuck.
Yeah.
And then you're on an airplane with someone sitting next to you that goes, how do you come up with those characters? You know, it's like, we're going to be circling for another, you know. Good first world problems for all the people who want to be in show business.
How often are you accosted on airplanes?
Or do
you
try to... Lately, my wife started to come with me. Mm-hmm. So okay. I've been accosted more.
Strength the numbers.
Oh, she gets just frisky at altitude. No, there's no accosting.
She orders the blanket and you know you're in
trouble.
Well,
I am just an alcoholic on an airplane. And I've said this before. I don't like flying.
That's right.
I've tried medication. Doesn't work. Yeah. So... Well, you know, Heineken.
Well, in your defense, you know, heroin was a strong choice to open with to try to like sedate yourself on an airplane.
On an airplane, yeah. Well, this is the
maybe try NyQuil.
We have a 9 a.m. flight, and we're on the pointy part of the airplane. You know,
yeah.
And would you like a beverage?
Yeah. So right away,
I say to my wife,
right away beverage.
But then I try to think like I don't really care what they think. This is the therapy working. So I would like a Heineken. They're like, oh, okay. But then I've told my wife ahead of time to order a Heineken, and she wants coffee because she has no fear.
Yeah.
So she orders a Heineken. I chug them both, put both cans on her tray and go, what? So there's been tabloid, Dana Carvey's wife.
Sure.
But I only eat a few, maybe three or four, and then I just drink water and fight the rest of the way.
On like an hour flight?
Well, no, 6 hour flight.
Yeah,
okay. Well, we had two storms. We came out of Hawaii this before the volcano blew, and it was two storms are intersecting, and and so it was 3 hours of bump and grind, all the pressure of get the food out. No, don't try to get the food out, because then and trays and spaghetti sauce.
We don't need that.
Yeah, it's fine. Safety goes ahead of airline food.
Yeah.
Just slightly.
And it's just someone with a baby who's in the aisle, and it's really rocking and rolling, and they're holding it and checking for stuff overhead. Don't do that. Don't be that person. And what I do is, because I'm used to atmospheric stuff, so I'm always opening, because no one looks out the window. It's all dark.
Yeah.
So I open it and look to see if we're outside the storm, and then I close it. Then I open it. Then I close it. And it goes on for hours. And a woman after we landed go, you scared me. You were just open. What were you looking at? I said I have a fear of flying.
Yeah.
I had four Heinekens in me. I hadn't used the bathroom in 6 hours. I was looking for atmospheric changes so I would know, irregardless of the seatbelt signs, whether I could use the restroom. Wouldn't it be interesting if this really trends? Like this?
This
you too? It's the you too movement, not me too, but it's for all of us.
Yeah.
You too?
Yeah. And that's really what the internet has done for whatever weird thing that has happened to you or you think has only happened to you. Mm-hmm. If you put it out on social media, someone's like, oh my God. You too.
Hashtag you too.
I just want to get so famous like Katy Perry to where you can have 45 million followers on Twitter and you can literally one morning tweet, what's up? And 45,000 people will retweet that.
Yeah.
You know? Or she'll just put, hey, or like, had a sandwich today.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Thinking about changing my hair color. 90,000 retweets.
Well, it's great. At the point I am on the planet and where I am and what I've done with these shenanigans.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, you're like, hey, man, I'm doing a little video or I'm taking it. And I rarely do it. And
a lot of people respond.
I'm going, hey, look, that's like 8,000 views. And then I'll check Katy Perry and it's like 120 million. I'm like, am I really doing it?
Well,
is it a Twilight Zone-y way? Am I actually doing anything?
Yeah. Well, you just need more cleavage there, Dana.
Yeah.
let me process that. I root for all the young people. I just look at the work ethic and the drive. I'm like, I don't judge it. To me, it's like, oh, but echo. You know, it's an algorithm and a drumbeat. And, you know, I grew up with Zeppelin and Neil Young. So it's hard for me as a grumpy old man to relate to the music, but I love the effort.
I love that you said on your Conan appearance when you were doing.
Geez, somebody stayed up till 8.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's on TBS at 8.
Well, I do the promos for it, you know?
Oh, that's right. Yeah. So that's why.
But also, I love Conan. He's the best.
He is.
And, you guys are always so fun together. But you were mentioning how Obama sang.
Like Little Rocket Man.
Right. And like how much cooler he was in the songs he sang and what Trump.
Right.
Like he sang Al Green or something? Or
well, it's always the juxtaposition. I do have a new bit where the next president will be the most boring human being that's ever been invented.
Sure.
Like literally, hi, my name's Brian. I won't say or do anything very abrupt. I will consider every moment, you know. But with Obama, that, and the cool part of Obama was you can see it on YouTube, people. Singing and singing well. He did Al Green. And then he did once, we're going to come together as a country. And then all the pausing is like, amazing. Right. And the church goes crazy.
Yeah.
And then, you know, in my own way, I thought, what would Trump sing? And it makes me laugh. I just came upon me and I know it's stupid, but the cuckoo and the creeper, the kind of cuckoo creeper, the cuckoo and the creeper, the Adams family, diddle-diddle-diddle. One of the catchiest things. Some guy got paid a lot of money.
Still getting
1965.
Right. Yeah.
You got anything that's catchy? We need an Adams Family theme.
Does it have snaps?
Diddle-doot.
Yeah.
But let me ask you guys a pop culture question.
Fire away.
Because I said it one night to the audience as a joke. Like, no one knows the lyrics after they're kooky and they're creepy. The entire audience knew it.
What?
They're kooky and they're creepy.
Mysteriously.
In spooky.
Spooky?
Spooky. They're even kind of
how many things hooky. Rhyme with creepy? Like, it's only got to be like
they
four words.
Moderately cheaply. They're a bunch of juice. No, I can say that.
Can't I say it? Yeah. I did it the other night, and I said to the audience, because I was doing Nixon, you know, the racist Nixon. I mean, he was president. We had crazy presidents.
Sure.
Him with Twitter, I don't like Jews. Hashtag yarmulke. So the audience on the west side goes dead silent.
Yeah.
So I had to go, wait a minute. I'm doing an impression of an anti-Semitic person. I'm not an anti-Semitic person.
And then the ultimate of that is the Jeff Dunham territory where you go, I'm not racist, the puppet is.
Yeah. Oh, I know. Did any puppeteer ventriloquist ever reverse it? Where
I'm racist, the puppet
they're
is
the
fine.
Racist asshole, and the puppet's a straight man. I don't know why no one ever did that.
That's
look at those tits. Don't say that. That's mean. But I really like those tits. Come on, don't say that.
This could be our last game.
They've never done that.
No.
Where they're the asshole
That's
and the
brilliant.
Puppets.
Oh. I've never seen that.
And I think it's literally the worry where it's like, no, I'll make the puppet racist because then I'm not.
Exactly.
And they just assume that that's how... that's how people are going to view
Sexist,
it.
Sexist, racist. It's always, look at those tits.
You know what I love though in that
hey,
clip,
don't do that.
In that clip though, then
me too.
You said people didn't really respond, and then you said, "Whoa, 19 much?" to the audience, like addressing their millennialness.
Yeah, yeah.
And Conan just had a very sweet, genuine laugh at that, and I laughed at that because it was a very like obvious, like yeah, like the crowd collectively sometimes, as it does in a show, doesn't understand the reference.
I get the biggest hiccup. The thing that makes me the happiest mm-hmm. now is the audience being quiet. Like if a guy is stone-faced and I'm doing Jimmy Carter and having a nervous breakdown with peanut butter in his head, I got peanut butter hair, peanut butter pants, and the idea that he has to listen to it and look at me is the funniest. And young people will laugh, but they don't know who I'm doing a lot of the time. But I love it when they're just laughing anyway, because look at this old guy doing that funny. Those are funny voices. Well, I don't know what this guy is. This is like a Bill Cosby.
By the way, did you see the interview with the juror from the Cosby jury?
No.
He said that he voted guilty, and they said like, oh, did Cosby's reputation have anything to play with that? He goes, I don't know who Bill Cosby is.
Oh wow,
he's 22 years old, and he's like I don't know, he's a celebrity. Wow. I don't know what he's done, and Amen. You just have to take a pause and go, well, shit, what has he done in the last?
You know, he's on the road. You know, he used to compete with me. I played Washington State in Spokane. And the guy goes, Cosby is here for the last, you know, parents' weekend in a big field house.
Oh, that's how you competed with Cosby. Jesus Christ. I just got very scared. When you're like, I used to compete with Cosby. I'm like, oh, God, this is not going to go well. I had a Pez dispenser full of Quaaludes. He had a Super Soaker. I couldn't compete.
But he was competitive with me, and that made me laugh so hard.
Yeah.
Oh, that was Regis. Yeah.
That was Regis. I'm out of control.
But what makes me interested in Cosby is two things. One is if Michael Jackson. Let's just say you like children. Mm-hmm. You create an amusement park.
Yeah, right.
And then to draw them in.
Sure.
So if you like to do Cosby's activity, because he did not talk like that in the 60s.
No.
So it evolved into kind of a happy guy.
Yeah.
Just take a little. I would have taken a pill from a guy. Here's a little thing, take it down.
Yeah, it sounds harmless.
Then we're going to get the pill. Then we're going to touch the titty.
And you're like, whoa, what was that last thing?
Then caught a pill and the gun.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah, but, I'm still following.
Yeah. Well, no, if he does get off and gets out, he's like 102, he'll still be doing it. Because the pill.
Oh, yeah.
It's an exaggerated Cosby.
Yeah.
Slightly.
Yeah, it's just...
But not really.
It's insane to me to think that there was someone on that jury that goes, who's that guy? Like, that's just madness.
It's just like what you were commenting on. Like, there's so much shit. There's not enough... you can't consume...
Nothing exists.
Everything.
Yeah, it's just there's too much of everything. Jesus, Hitler, maybe Trump. In 1,000 years... You could say to people on the street, who was Jesus? Who was Hitler? Who was Trump?
Wow, Trump has like crossed over into that echelon, huh?
Jesus, Hitler, me. Mary, fuck, kill.
My favorite thing to do, which I'll do tonight now, is minutia, again, where a lot of the people just stare at me.
Yeah.
So it's Trump getting the Nobel Prize, which I broke first, and now they're mentioning he might get it because of North Korea.
Yeah,
yeah.
And he would be like, I love the Nobels. I love the Nobelians. I love prizes. I love prizes. I love Cracker Jacks, caramel corn glaze, like you'd never believe. Nuts and caramel corn with prizes.
I still get the Happy Meal just for the prize.
But then get into the minutia. To me, it like keep going is the fun part.
And then
sailor and a dog on the box. A little boy with a sailor hat. Isn't that what's on the Cracker Jack?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And then Sarah Huckabee Sanders has to come out and be like, he never said that he was going to he liked Cracker Jacks better than Bazooka Joe Bubblegum. Just he liked them equally.
That's just gotta be like, I almost feel sorry for the woman where she just has to wake up every day and
she loves it.
Look
that's
at a report and go, fuck.
I don't think she does. I think she's like,
she's
hell
really
yeah.
good compared to Sean Spicer. I gotta say, she's handles it.
It is crazy how composed she remains, but also I don't think she's smiled. She looks like the type of person to put on perfume before she takes a shit. Like, she just like, like something about her doesn't, neither
that
do I.
That should be on a t-shirt.
It doesn't, like something about her just seems like unorthodox and unordinary, but she's like, look, this is how I get up.
Yeah.
You know, I'm putting on pants, but I'm going to
I don't know. The Iran deal happened today as we're broadcasting.
So we're now we're out of that, which I'm not smart enough
to
know what that is.
The most horrible deal. The most horrible. He's just deconstructing every single thing Obama did.
Sure.
And even Obama responded today in a long Facebook post.
Oh, did he?
No, shouldn't do that. That's dangerous. That was a good plan. We did the things we wanted. The most horrible, terrifically awful, craziest thing.
This is the craziest deal since this woman, Diane from Iowa, didn't take the deal on Deal or No Deal.
Deal or No Deal.
I mean, it's like...
A little Howie.
He literally would come... I mean, it's like there's nothing... You're right. There's nothing that he won't undo.
Yeah. I saw a great tweet today where someone said that if Obama wants Trump to do certain things, he should literally, like, right now just do the opposite. So if Obama wants gun control... Obama should start touting the NRA.
Yes.
Like, just be like, it's the greatest thing ever. Guns for everybody.
I love how everybody's got a pretty good Obama.
Keep in mind, Dana, all of ours are always yours.
Yeah, they're just impressions of you. Yeah.
No, but I always tell anyone, accuracy is overrated. It's just a rhythm, and everyone should do Obama, and everyone should do Trump.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
They're just...
Except my Glenn Close is my Glenn Close. You've never done that, so... You want to hear it?
I will not be ignored. No, is that what it was? Yeah, oh, was that it?
No, I don't know. Oh. I don't have a Glenn Close. So.
Oh, really? Yeah. You don't?
But that was good. I was going to make something up and be like, oh, pickles on my burger again? You know, like she's never said
that. One of those things? Yeah. Well, the trick to doing impressions is always to say the name of who you're doing. Like, hi, I'm Glenn Close. Yeah. You know, like, who can argue with that?
That was it.
I'm Glenn Close.
Yeah. No one's going to be like, hey, I know Glenn. That's not.
I told you, I'm Glenn Close. They got it by it at least halfway.
Excuse me, how much for that horse? I'm Glenn Close.
I'm Glenn Close.
And just have her get specific about. Is there an impression recently that you've been fucking around with in your shows that you're. Or has there ever been one that happens that you just do like. I mean, all of them happen.
I'm just lazy. I mean, if I was assigned an impression,
right.
Like I always. I go, I got to get John Malkovich. But I would have to tape him and study him. But I know there's something there. I think Woody Harrelson is in so many movies now.
Yeah.
There's definitely something there. This is just homework
stuff. He's in the new Solo movie coming out.
He's in every other movie. It's in his global contract. But there's voices there to do. You know, the only one I did in the last year was Jeff Bridges because I'd seen Hell or High Water.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, I just thought, well, he always sounds like he just had a little bit more to eat. I just had a double foot-long Subway double cheese and double meat. You know, I mean, I just love a guy who's just acting always like he's just ate too much. And his belt is way too tight.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I'll be good in a little bit. I just said, I stopped the old yogurt shop on the way over here, and I laid down that bottom self-serve coffee ice cream, put on the Reese's Pieces, little Kit Kat bars. And,
that doesn't sound healthy, Jeff.
Chocolate sprinkles, and then I put in the gummy bears, and I put down another layer. See, again, everything I do is the same thing. I want to take it to madness, because that's what I did in high school. Yeah, my friends were stoned in the car.
Now, are you...
You weren't stoned with them?
Initially, no. Later, oh my God. No, I smoked pot for 1 year of my life.
That's it?
Yeah.
What made you stop?
How do we get that year back?
Didn't like Neil Young's next album. No. I don't, you know...
That's when all the millennials tuned out. Neil who?
One night, I know Neil who. Lincoln what?
Yeah. You
know? Who the hell's... Roosevelt. Good. Nothing
matters
anymore.
Did Abe Lincoln guest star on
Did Abe Lincoln anything
on Hannah
funny.
Montana?
Yes. Do you have an Abe Lincoln joke? Because I have one. I probably did it on one of these podcasts.
What is it?
What's your Abe?
Well, because you have to have an Abe Lincoln joke.
Do you have to?
I go, if there was a grainy YouTube video of Abraham Lincoln masturbating, would he still have a memorial, and would it be that large? Because it'd be a YouTuber, that's him. Oh, that's Lincoln. Look at the hat. Yeah. He's going at it. That's furiously masturbating. Oh. Just curious.
Yeah.
That's my Lincoln chunk.
It's solid.
Brad.
God.
Lincoln.
Lincoln off the cuff.
That's it. Oh, that's the joke.
Yeah, no.
It's like Tough Crowd, but it's all Lincoln material.
Lincoln off the cuff is that it really wasn't Lincoln. That's why he wore the stovepipe hat. It was actually a dwarf up there, Ratatouille style, just controlling him.
Ratatouille style.
But a dwarf wouldn't get elected, so they needed this big, tall guy from Illinois. So that's what happened.
Yes.
So
I like that.
So that's my Lincoln chunk.
So that's my Lincoln chunk.
Coming up on the new season of That's My Lincoln Chunk, we've got Dana Carvey, Brad Williams, and Adam Ray.
What would you want your statue, if you could have one erected of you, to be? If they put one outside your house or a let's say there's a comedy museum like the way there is for basketball and football and baseball.
I don't know. I just think when I go see the stars, it's going to be Church Lady and Garth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that'd be pretty much it. Maybe George Senior. I don't know.
I think
when I go to the stars, because remember, we all came from stars, and we're going to return to stars. That's just science, not religion.
Yep.
You know that, right?
Yep.
Okay.
That's and I think Garth
he is smoking pot. I told you.
Yeah. No, that's
I'm joking.
It's just science. It's carbon.
It is science. Yeah, I believe in that too.
Yeah, I think Garth would be the best White House press secretary ever.
Oh my God!
Well, they got a Bill and Ted movie announced today.
Yeah, Bill and Ted.
Could
3.
A brother get a sequel? I'll do it for $10 million net up front, and I'll show up with bells on. They can tighten my neck
literal
if they
bells.
Want. Chris Sinks, Carvey, get Garth out there again. Get that big payday, huh? 4,200 theaters. Now the demo's trending.
It's funny you bring up Dennis Miller because he was back in the news recently. After the White House Correspondents' Dinner.
Yeah.
He had a tweet about Michelle Wolf.
Right, but then it was the meta joke of like I'm gonna try to find out who he was and get back to you, but
Twitter, that's not how
Twitter didn't get the joke.
Yes, because I listened to his podcast to hear what his take was on it, and it turns out he was making a joke that just Twitter didn't get. Had to be frustrating.
That's Dennis. It was his gigantic, kind of Luxor Luther brain or whatever. Give me a Dennis Miller situation or occupation.
You got one?
Anything. Don't even think.
Okay.
Occupation.
Dennis Miller as the clerk at 7-Eleven.
It's a clerk? What do you mean clerk?
The guy.
Cash register.
Clerk, like I'm fucking in the 1940s.
Christ sink. Well, who'd you expect? Habib over here? Okay, get the hot dog and the big gulp over here. Check your cholesterol, Kiki, okay? Hey, in the back, we got the mirrors, okay? I see you got a Kit Kat down your pants. All right. Okay. I need more riffraff in here. I'm getting 850 large. I need more people with weaponry and drug addiction coming in my skull at 2 a.m. Okay.
Dennis Miller's directing a softcore porn for Cinemax.
You guys are so specific. A clerk? Softcore porn for what?
For Cinemax.
Yeah. Has to be Cinemax, not so HBO. Specific. And we will know the difference.
Okay. Captain Large Groin. Let's keep it in. Let's keep the missile in the pocket, okay? We're not going tight on that thing. All right, let's get declothed besides the little barriers in the crotch area. Let's get frontal. Put the sheet down on the top of the crack, okay? Coming on in. it's a thing I do for my brain.
Sure. Mr. Miller, would you like the woman to start standing up or lying down?
Softcore porn directors.
Soft porn. Okay, we don't have a budget that big. Okay, Kiki, put him on the bed. Put the sheets over. Let's get a wide. Get out of here. Okay, I got a date with a cappuccino. All right. Christ's sake, standing up, sitting down. What do we got? 29 setups. Our budget's bigger than that guy's cock. Okay. No, it's Dennis. I'm just filtering Dennis.
Now I have to know if they like because. Obviously,
you have to know that.
I have to know.
Not leaving until we find out.
Would you do the White House Correspondents' Dinner? If
Todd on his podcast, I guess, was floating me out. I don't know if I'd want to follow the incendiary person. Because then look at Softy Milk Toast. Look at this guy with no point of view, with his fluffed up, craggy neck out there with stuff that means nothing and doesn't offend anybody. Unless I had Dennis write my stuff. I wouldn't want to go in his Softy follow-up. That was my hashtag.
Are you following?
But I don't mind doing it. You
would crush.
All my stuff is passive aggressive, and a lot of people don't even know what I'm saying. When I did the Me Too thing and I talked about the strength of Katharine Hepburn, no one understood what I was trying to say. Is beat the shit out of these stupid men. Beat the shit out of them because they're coming. They're not giving up. And by the way, men are obsolete. Women are going to dominate the next six, I didn't do that on the show, but they are in two generations.
Oh, I have a lesbian friend, and her wife are having a child with and they barely needed sperm. Like they had,
right.
We're really not useful.
No, I don't think. I think that bioevolutionary wise, women are very multitasking brains. Educationally, mm-hmm. now that the organizational skills it was in the bio lab, you know, was women, and they're graduating college, postgraduate, 3-2, 3-1.
Yeah.
So now that muscles don't matter, because I was on the tarmac in Albuquerque, and this woman named Tammy came out in this Air Force jumpsuit and jumped into an F-16. So she weighed 102 pounds, and she mm-hmm. could rain death and terror on a million men. By the way, I thought when ISIS was at its peak, we should have put women in bikinis in the F-16s, raining down. And leaflets saying that's what raining down. Yeah. Oh, mother, come take it. We want... Ah! Or the gay guy and a woman raining
yeah.
down. Come on, Bridget. Reload! That's a pretty good mic. Yeah, so I'm getting off on the effects.
Yeah.
But anyway, women will dominate. Men's testosterone will be eventually reduced, will be amorphous, kind of embryonic creatures in the sand. And women will impregnate themselves. They'll grow to 6'8". They'll be she-beast, and they'll dominate the planet.
And down then we will finally watch the WNBA.
I don't mind it because they pass. My Warriors yeah. could be a WNBA team.
Well, because it's, yeah. it's just because well, passing, the in, best threes. Basketball.
Passing yeah. in threes. Yeah. Passing in threes. Yeah. Good Lord.
Where
do we go from here, fellas?
Wait, I want to get back to your
Too bad we have nothing to say.
I want to get back to your 1 year of pot real quick.
Yeah.
And what was Dana Carvey like when he would get a little high? Sillier? Goofier?
Well, you know
less,
what?
Less locked in? Would it chill you out? Because your brain, I feel like, is moving so quick.
We laugh a lot as humans yeah. between 18 and 25 before mm-hmm. life starts. Yeah. So even when I'm like hiking in Griffith Park, I'll see a group of young people like early mid 20s. They're just laughing. You know, and then I'll see people 40 and up just kind of, oh, well, it's over soon.
What are they laughing about?
Yeah. Yeah. And so you just laugh a lot anyway. But yeah, I hatched a lot of bits from that. I liked ice cream. I liked movies.
Yeah.
Music mostly, I would say. And Neil Young had Comes the Time out during that year, and which we became possessed by, me and my friends.
Was there a movie or a bit or something that you remember, like, or a day? Like, I can remember a stony day where I laughed so hard that, I mean, like, I don't remember everything that was discussed, but I remember a couple moments of the day because it was so
right
memorable.
I don't know. I'm wondering. I mean, it's more like hallucinogenics, which I did twice, you know, yeah. mushrooms. Those yeah. are what I remember.
Me too, yeah.
That was more stuff that still lasts.
Yes.
Now, in terms of...
That's a better high, because at least I got more introspective.
Well, my friends
I also talked to some bugs, and you don't get to do that when you're stoned.
Well, we did the mushrooms, and then we went in and saw the Spruce Goose, which is this Howard Hughes, the world's largest airplane.
I remember
airplane.
That, yeah.
And we walked around the turn
in Long Beach.
And saw this giant plane, and just we fell down laughing at the idea that a human being made a plane that big. We were just completely gone for yeah. hours about the size of the plane. And laughing really hard about the...
My plane's bigger.
My plane's bigger. But the ratio stuff, the pamphlet was all about what could fit. So because the Queen Mary's there. And it's like, to show you how big it is, you know, it'd be like 1,200 bumblebees could get in that.
I love that.
3,800 polar bears would fit in that stack.
And you're like, I don't know the size of a polar bear. You have right. the fucking plane in front of me. But I can just look and see it's huge.
It's a big stack. Yeah. Who cares?
Yeah. Yeah.
2,900 Shetland ponies could fit into the back. We don't give a fuck what can fit into what, bitch.
75,000 Polish butt plugs will fit right on the inside.
Well, that's it. And then, in, you know, the Queen Mary could fit inside the Spruce Goose. You know, it became sexual.
Would you ever do characters while you were riding the high?
Yeah, I did.
And they come from that?
I did. We went to the L.A. County Art Museum on mushrooms. And I saw a Rembrandt self-portrait of a Dutch aristocrat.
Yeah.
And I thought, man, he painted him as such a dick. He clearly hated who he was painting because it was this elite thing. And then I started hatching the voice of the aristocrat torturing the artisan who's doing his portrait. And I was like, sketch me if you can. I'd dance away. So he'd actually move away. If you don't sketch me, I shall shoot you. And this went on for hours. Sketch me if I... And I did it on Saturday Night Live, and it was Conan's favorite sketch.
Oh,
I did it
God.
The first season. Sketch me if you can. I'd dance away. And Phil Hartman was the artist trying to sketch me, and I'm dancing. And Lovitz was just the guy going, dance, dance, dance. You know, it was madness.
Oh, my God.
That was the only one. But mostly, in the end of the day, most of the stuff comes out just from being tired and silly and goofy.
Would you write
drugs
stuff down or
help?
How did you
never really wrote much down. Always wrote on stage, playing small clubs though.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I realized my favorite club is like 80 seats, 60 to 80, because I can feel the whole room.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know? So
still.
Oh, right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, you know, because when you think about it, you know, the special I did was in 1500 and it was mm-hmm. really, it was a fine club, but for me, not good. Too big. Too big.
The Wilbur, that was too big.
For what I was doing, because I was hatching it in clubs, so I'm doing, you know, exhausted Hitler, well, you know, my buttocks also saw, and I'm really just doing this tiny thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the shots were very tight, and you're emoting and trying to push it, even though you can't feel the energy. I've seen it with other friends of mine, by the way. If you have a certain style where you're kind of a plaintive, like yelling, in a good way, brilliant comics do that, like, oh, you know, then that's okay. But if you're doing any kind of slightly sketchy conversation stuff,
subtle things, and especially if you're doing impressions where you're doing a lot of facial expressions, it's going to be
tough.
And
just attitude. If you're not mugging, you're just trying to inhabit the attitude. Anyway, this is good for the comedy fans.
It is. I want to ask too, because I'm going to do my special in the fall, finally.
Depends on the style. I mean, you guys have a high energy style.
But size of the room, I want to know about too. Like, I know
you
Brad.
2,000.
What's that?
Two in your last one?
And that seems about, like, I am partial to clubs too, but like, obviously, theaters are dope. And for your first one, I think it does need to look.
It's
like
gotta
big.
Look grand.
Like, I just saw a buddy of mine who did one. It looked like it was almost shot in a fucking high school theater. And I know what he was going for. And I was like, it just did not play to me. I was like, if I had no idea who he was, I'd be like, oh, well, clearly it's not a big deal. Like, you do want that grandiose feeling, right?
Yeah.
But obviously, I'm thinking like, you know, 600, 700, 800 maybe is like a good.
That's solid.
Right?
Yeah. But it just has to feel. And trust me, because when I did my first one, that Santa Barbara theater that I did was not filled.
No.
So they had to use a couple camera tricks to make it look like it was filled, and they did, thank God.
But what about the second one?
Oh, the second one I made a boatload of money and it was filled to the brim. Come on.
I like it. But yeah, it depends on your style. I've had fun sets in big rooms. Big rooms play different. It depends. Yeah. You know, they can play pretty intimate. So
Now are you, because your kids, when they open for you, they're doing these larger rooms. Are you...
Yeah.
Are you giving them these tips?
Absolutely. I just say if you're like loudly making a point, like an attorney in a courtroom with a lot of exasperation and energy, then that's what's required, even if it's the setup. Mm-hmm. You know, you just take on that persona. I mean, you did it in the last special. Yeah. Like, what are these people coming up to me?
Yeah.
You know, and it's coming from an honest place, though.
Yeah.
You know, but if you're doing something small, that's where it gets a little difficult.
Mm-hmm. I don't think you have been here since the when you did my show at the Comedy Store and just talking about intimate rooms.
Right.
But you, first of all, it's just so, and I don't know how much you think about it, but people comment on it like before and after when you're there, but like when you're back there and you got your notes and you're going through it and you're kind of almost seeming like you're not like prepared at all for what's about to happen, and then you go out and literally are just there, always looks like there's a somewhat of a game plan going on, but you keep it so loose and then you just crush so hard, and then
thank you.
But back there you're just like, nah. And even when I bring you up, you're like, this isn't gonna go. Like, I don't know what's gonna happen. Like,
well, the death of comedy is I'm gonna crush him tonight.
It is, right? Yeah. No. Okay, so that's part of it. It's almost trying to, you don't want to.
Well,
out,
just where I'm at now is kind of full circle, because I was playing small clubs in before SNL.
Yeah.
And I had a structure. I mean, I wasn't. And then I like surprising myself, and I like things coming out a little different, as opposed to brilliant comics who are structural and word for word, which is fine. But I like kind of surprising myself and giving a sense that anything could happen in the moment.
Yeah.
But I don't always achieve that. But that's my goal. And I know that I have a lot of weapons, you know, because I can go to these different voices or attitudes. And
if you get too far off, if you feel yourself getting maybe taking too, going down risk avenue too hard, maybe if.
Well, if you can, you know, my nickname used to be Sensitive Man. If you can read the room and sense in the moment and then comment, you know, it's every comedian has that somewhere. Friday Night Late Show, where it's like, you're doing your act. I'm sure you guys have had it. Okay, I've got my act.
Yeah.
But right now, I'm just so tired, couldn't give a fuck that right, I'm just going to take this path.
Oh, yeah.
Whether it's crowd work or I'm going to extend this and tag this bit I've done a lot of times. And then my brain just wakes up. Even if I'm doing Trump again tonight, because we're going to the club, I'll try to make something different about it to make myself laugh. And I do find it really funny when some people are not really laughing.
Yeah.
It really makes me laugh.
Well, it's brilliant because in one of those comedy store shows you had, and I don't know if you can just explain what happened with that guy who had flown in from Spain, I think, right?
Yes.
I'd never seen anything like this in my 11 years of comedy. This is fucking bonkers.
This was bizarre for me, too.
Wow.
So I'm out there doing all my... And then there's a guy up front.
By the way, getting applause breaks like every... like, it was crazy. Like, you always crush, but this was like...
It was a very good night. Yeah. It was a very good night. Yeah. And it's nice because the audience is not totally my demographic, so it's kind of fun.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's as if Bob Newhart came into a club and crushed when I was 35 or something. Like, fucking Newhart. You can't... They don't even understand that King Kong is on the building. I mean, fuck, crush. But I I love. But that night, I had a lot of energy. And then I sometimes I'll pass out my notes to the audience, again, to wake myself up.
Yeah, because it's, and then you have them pick a bit.
Yeah, I have structured little one-liners. And so if they say Scarface at Thanksgiving dinner or whatever, then it puts me in a surprising mode. So it gets me in the space I want to be in. So somehow the guy mentioned Garth, right? Or Wayne's World.
Yeah.
And, oh, that's what you want. So I started doing it to him, this guy in the audience, like, what? And then he mentioned he was from Spain, and I talked about that, whatever his name was. And you go to Spain, and, you know, you're trying to do a separation movement in Catalonia. I did some riff.
Yeah.
And then I was moving on to another bit, and I looked over. He's in the front row, and I saw that he was really sincerely sobbing.
Yeah.
Like, just sobbing like that. And his girlfriend, whatever, had his arm around him. And I said, what? What the hell? And it goes, well, he's from Spain and Wayne's World's his favorite thing and he was visiting here and he's just overcome. So I brought him up on stage, which always fun. It's in the moment. We took a selfie. We talked about it.
Crowd went nuts.
And that's, you know, the great thing about stand-up. You got to have your go-tos because some nights it just ain't happening. But it is loose theater. It can be jazz-like in the moment.
Yeah,
those nights.
You can definitely improvise, and it doesn't have to go the way you wrote it out.
Yeah, you guys have those nights because you do enough sets where, like, man, I was just really connected to it.
Friday Night Late Show, when you can tell that they've been drinking, they don't want to be talked at. They don't want to be performed for with material. They want you to be kind of loose, and that's when you kind of have to open up and be like, okay, well, let's kind of play the way you want me to.
I like that.
How aware are you that you have global fans like that? And was that, like, experience just, like... Because again, it's somebody your level. You know that like when you walk, like you could, people are gonna freak out at most instances. But like to get a real moment that has substance to it, like that, where there's like this backstory and finding out that it's his favorite and he's all this way. The odds of him actually seeing you and having a chat with you were not even in the realm of possibility for
him. It had never happened to me before. I can kind of understand. I mean, I have friends who have movies that are bigger than anything I've ever done. But Wayne's World did
Glenn
travel.
Close. Yeah.
Glenn Close, yes.
What's your impression of Glenn?
Nerd. Again? Yeah. I'm Glenn Close.
Perfect.
I've never been to Spain.
Great movie, by the way.
It's like she's in the room.
Yeah, she's a great actor. Well, what was the one with Michael Douglas?
Fatal Attraction.
Fatal Attraction.
Fatal Attraction. Oh, is that Charlie?
Is that Michael Douglas?
Winning. No, I was trying to do a Douglas, yeah.
Fatal Attraction. I'm Michael Douglas.
Yeah.
I'm Michael Douglas.
Megan Catherine Zeta. It's got a little Nixon. No, not Nixon. Reagan, right?
Well.
Is there a little Reagan and Douglas?
Well, I don't think
By the way, that's the first time I've ever said, is there a little Reagan and Douglas?
Well, I mean, he had a lot of sex, but not that much.
I could only do his dad. That's the only guy. But nobody knows who he is. Jack Douglas talk like this. There was a guy, for the younger listeners, who talked like this. And he was a movie star. And that's the way he talked. And I did his last movie. Or his last big movie, him and Burt Lancaster.
You did. What was that?
You don't know that story?
No.
I can't remember what flawed class I'm on. It was called Tough Guys, 1986. It was filmed in 85, right before I got SNL.
Oh, my God.
And I played the parole officer, with Kirk Douglas and Burt Lancaster, who played these guys who were in prison for 40 years and then came out of prison. And I walked up to Kirk Douglas. Now, look him up, kids. I walked up to Kirk Douglas first day.
At one point, the biggest star on the planet.
Burt Lancaster, Kirk Douglas. It's like maybe Clooney and Brad Pitt or even, I don't know. I don't know the young Chris.
Hey, you're in the top five of the credits.
Yeah, I was the third lead, kind of.
Yeah.
I mean, Eli Wallach was in there.
Alexis Smith, Charles Durning, and Dana Carvey.
Charles Durning.
But I hadn't done anything, and I was terrified. And they, Kirk Douglas, I go, I'm Dana Carvey. I play Richie. He goes, well, you're perfect. You're exactly what we need for Richie. Then I went over to Burt Lancaster. I go, I play Richie. How many motion pictures have you done? I go, this is my first. And he goes, I've done 72. You've done zero. That's 72 more than you. How are you going to be a movie star? You got no chin. That's one thing he told me. Yeah. You can't be a movie star without a chin.
Have you seen Jay Leno? He'll be a movie star.
Yeah. He'll pack the Cineplexus.
In fact, I will. I'm in this movie, too.
That's in my movie, too. Yeah.
Has Jay Leno ever been in a movie, by the way?
Yes, he has.
What movie?
Oh, my God. I just saw a poster for it today. That's so weird that you say that. He was in a cop movie.
He was in a cop movie, but he famously said, yeah, why do movies? Tell a joke, find out if it's funny a year later.
Yeah.
You know, Jay always had these
really?
Kind of show business gems about just the pragmatic
He was in a movie. This is going to sound like a Mad Libs, but this is absolutely true. He was in a movie called Collision Course where he played a cop.
Yeah, and he was pretty good.
With Mr. Miyagi, Pat Morita.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Pat Morita played the other cop.
If this podcast was a podcast where we watched movies that came up in conversation during the podcast, that's what we would watch.
Yes, right now.
I think it's obvious. She's the killer. Dun, dun, dun. Yeah. I think he was actually pretty good, but he had that thing like, stand up. Like when I did Jerry's show, Jerry Seinfeld, the Comedians in Cars.
Yeah.
He's just like, if Jay and I have a stand-up day, we're happy. I mean, they just love the form in a very profound, singular way. He's got the biggest sitcom in history, The Tonight Show for 20 years, but they're kind of like, I'm going to stand up. I mean, it's kind of cool. I mean, they're so pure about this,
It's cool that no matter what they do, it's still going to be about stand-up. It's not going to be the thing where they would do movies, and then when the money runs out, then they feel like, ah, crap, I have to do stand-up now, which you see so many times, and I get why guys do it. They got to, pay the mortgage, but it's almost depressing when you're like, we know you don't want to be here. You have to be.
Well, that's the thing. That's why I shaved a couple dollars. People say, why do you save so much money? I go, so I can do whatever I want.
Yeah.
Well, what do you mean? You could have a watch, a $50,000 watch on your wrist, or be healthy and be with your family. Well. I'll take the watch. But, I was talking to Conan about this. I said, look, stand up at its core is transporting yourself someplace else.
Yeah.
So when I was a little kid thinking maybe I could be funny on TV, I never thought the core of it would be getting my body to another location. Because I would do a one-nighter in Orlando from San Francisco, a corporate date, go to the airport, flight's delayed 2 hours, lightning storm. So it's basically a 15-hour trip to get to Orlando.
Yeah.
Pass out for the night, get up, psych up with the notes, do the 45 minutes, shake some hands, go back to your room, wait, and then the flight's delayed, another 15 hours getting back. So it's like a 40-hour experience. I'm on stage for 45 minutes. So people go, what do you do for a living? I transport myself places.
Yeah.
And this other thing happens I barely remember.
Right.
But of course, they earned it, but Jay and, they're in the, come on, friend. Hey, it's time to take off.
Yeah.
I mean, Jay Leno is so unafraid of flying.
Yeah. Are we having cheese or salami or both?
Yeah. That going into Tahoe, so a friend of mine, I think Neelan was flying with him, and there was smoke, and we might have to circle. There was a forest fire in the little Tahoe airport.
Yeah.
And Jay's like, come on, let me go in, No, I'm not kidding. I told Jay once, and again, he has these little pearls of wisdom. I said, I have a fear of flying. He goes, what do you want to do, live forever? He has these really, but no.
He's like Gandhi.
No, I've talked to people. He's on just the roughest flight ever.
Chindi.
Hey, fellas, come on. But he says he's totally relaxed. Mm-hmm. in the same space, like if you did a brain scan of him, no matter if he's on stage, in an electrical storm, sleeping, it's just completely zen.
How's he achieving that?
Oh, that's just genetic, or it's just
all the fast food
self-delusion.
Eats.
I don't know how he does.
A lot of denim.
I'm in war. I'm at war inside my head all the time. Yeah. Conflicted. Yeah.
But you, you're quite the outdoorsman. Your hike with Kevin was great. I'm curious. Was that?
I was like, there today.
Oh, really?
Park. Yeah, hiking.
Is that your spot?
Well, it's the best place I've found to really hike because I like to hike really, really hard.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
How do you hike
my
hard?
My track and field.
Okay, a little jog.
Well, you have a hill.
Okay.
And you hike with intense purpose, like 14, 15 minutes a mile, and you don't stop, and you're just your pulse goes up and up and up. And
so you're not hiking to be like outdoors and witness the beauty of Mother Nature. You're like, I'm on a mission.
I'm on a mission. I'll do that like in Northern California, out in the redwoods and stuff. But I was a high school track, you know, mile or two.
So you're
mile.
Just really just like everything you got.
Well, I'd pass everybody. Yeah, and I just like to get all this angst out of me by going up that mountain.
And you're like, I'll do anything to get to the top of that mountain.
As fast as I can.
It's almost like Brad's climbing up on a couch. Like, yeah. It's the same.
It's a lot. I have a mission. I have something to do. I will tell you, though, on that thread, nothing is more fun for me than to walk on an airplane and have the whole plane just stare at me with my...
You told me this the other day.
Carry-on bag and
do you all, know this,
the
Dana?
Whole the whole plane's just like, how is he going to get that bag up there?
Oh, interesting.
How is that going to happen? And everyone's just sitting down. And then I throw down two armrests, jump up, so I'm standing on the armrest, and in one motion just grab my bag and just... huck it in the overhead storage bin, and then it's the easiest standing ovation I ever get.
They literally applaud.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Wouldn't
That's
you?
Happened many times where I just turn around and the entire plane is like, oh, my God.
By the way, I love that you said they literally applaud, because what if it was, boo, seen it.
Seen it. Done it.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, you're like, wow, last time we were on Southwest, the guy just rapped. This was a lot better.
I love that.
Yeah. So you hike with purpose. I board with purpose.
Yes.
Did you walk a lot when you were in Europe? You went to, I think,
Italy? Yeah, I went to London, Paris, south of France.
Was this a pleasure vacation, or were you doing some work over there?
No. I finally just said at this point, I'm not going to transport myself for work.
That was like your first vacay in years, I think.
Je les zombies, je les dos. I mean, it's very relaxing, the sound of je les tu le pas.
It really is.
Je les tu le pas. It's kind of like, we're a socialist place. We don't have a navy. We kiss and fuck and go to the beach.
We give cigarettes to babies.
Je les zombies te pas.
We've got rats who cook cartoons.
I love how animated you guys got in this.
It's music. Yeah.
I finished one of my stand-up shows the other night. I just started saying that and then just did it for a long time. Yeah. Predominantly white audience. Everybody retires at 52. While the trains don't run, the planes don't fly. But we drink our wine, make our love. I mean, yeah. So I was enamored with that culture. And now I like the British.
Now, were you walking around France doing that and trying to fit in?
No, I always have the thing, and I'm just like walking around. I love not being recognized. It's fantastic. And I basically didn't. I have the hat on, and you know. Mm-hmm. But I like London too, and I sometimes
some of my favorite ports of the world.
I try sometimes to see if I could order a pint as a Londoner. Without,
I did that all the time when I studied abroad there, and they picked up on it and they were like, "Can you stop doing that?"
It has to be very subtle.
Yeah,
you know.
But I was around it enough. We'd go ahead. Yeah.
Well, lately I've been doing McCartney, Lennon, now talking about Trump's election.
Who did they vote for president, Paul? Well, they voted for Big Orange Man. You know. Well, they made an orange man. Well, he's a big orange man. You know, the big orange head, and he's got little white things around his eyes, you know. And, you know, if you look at his hair, it's like a big cotton candy goldy thing. You know, around 3 o'clock in the afternoon, little green sparkles and purple sparkles come out of his head, you know. What did they do that for? You know, so then I just do that, and I go, let's get back to the show. You know?
How long could you go for that if you really, if the crowd was with it, how long would you let yourself?
10 minutes, Jesus probably. Because if I keep going to another topic of them talking about things, you know.
I mean, it's just kind of fascinating about them taking in anything that's going on in current society.
Oh, it's just something about that lilting thing. And again, a 20-year-old, if they're dying laughing, you know, how did he get elected? Well, he got nicknames for everybody, you know. He just knocked them down, you know, like a shooting gallery, you know. You're stupid, you're fat, you're dumb, you're Pocahontas, whatever. Well, what would he call me? He'd probably call you Jesus Johnny or something, you know? Well, that's pretty funny, you know, because we're more popular than Jesus. So I just like the rhythm in my head, but I like any rhythm I'm into is my favorite rhythm.
Is it always John and Paul? You'd never let like Ringo slide in? Like
I've never tried.
What
to
about
get
Melania? What is she up to? What does she think about?
Peace and love. Yeah. Peace and love.
Yeah.
Peace and love. 300 million net. He was a contract player in the beginning, you know.
Yeah.
You get 20 quid a week. Keep it simple, you know. Yeah. Oh yeah.
And now he's in the band.
Now he's got 300 million. Yeah.
Good so, Lord.
He was. He had no leverage at that point. I'll keep a two-stepper. You know, well, we're John Lennon, Paul
McCartney. He's got the coolest Beatle name, too.
Oh,
I think.
Yeah.
Oh, right? Without a doubt.
I mean, Star with two R's.
Well,
because, you know, if it's one R, then it's weird.
Yeah.
I quote this a lot in terms of trying to figure out why you guys are friends or who you're, like me with my wife.
Yeah. It's the cocaine.
And it's basically, it's this it sort of indescribable intrinsic sensibility.
Yeah.
And when Pete Best was kind of the best looking guy in the band, I don't know about his drumming, but when they fired him, John Lennon's quote was, you know, what was the reason? And John said, it wasn't a Beatle. You know, whoa. And when you saw all four of them, it was this cheeky Liverpudlian Irish sense of humor, you know, and that's what, you know, it's been a holiday's night and all their little colloquialisms. And I guess it was just that what's why Ringo got in there. Plus the best backbeat in the business. You know, he rode the kicker. You know, he's hitting the kicker, you know. And he's staying on the hi-hat through the break. There's no splashes. He's just riding it. Ringo sometimes would just stand up. Because he's like, you know, he wasn't that tall, Brad.
Yeah.
And he would stand up at the kit and play it. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
You playing a lot of guitar?
I play guitar and keyboards every day.
Which is your if the day presents itself for and the creative juices are flowing, what's going to come out first?
Which instrument?
No, what part of your body? And then and when?
Well, first of all, I would hike really, really hard, almost pass out. Then I would maybe try a different tuning on the guitar, put a capo on it, and try some chords. It's just meditative. Yeah. And then on the piano, which I play like a little kid. It's fun. That's really still a new toy for me. You know,
still, even though like it's been in the HBO special, it's been like a party rack sometimes. Like, do you ever get sort of nostalgic and you want to bring it back in?
Well, I was doing the improv a couple of weeks ago, and that was the piano was there. I assume it's the original one in the original position on stage where I hatched Chopping Broccoli. Wow. I started in Northern California, but I didn't have the hook Chopping Broccoli till that room. And Mark Hamill was in the audience that night. It was pretty fun to meet him. He's very funny. Very cool. But I almost went over there, but Wayne Fetterman opened, who's from my generation.
Oh, yeah.
And he's a big
Wayne.
Piano.
He's been here.
He's a really great piano guy.
Incredible.
So I said, how can I go up there and do this two finger? Dun, 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 dun. So I didn't get to it that night, but I will next time.
That how often are those memories flashing back when you get into a room like that, like the original improv? I mean, because that's where you're spending most of your time when you first got here, yeah?
Yeah, and I just think about how much I bombed and how terrified I was.
Oh, really?
And how intimidated I was by everybody, and everybody seemed smarter and faster. And
so that never goes away? Because those memories will flood my mind every now and then when I walk into a certain club. Like, I'll just... Like, even going to the main room where I do my once-a-month show, like, that's the first time I ever performed at the Comedy Store was there on a Bringer show. And Chris Rock actually went up after me, and I went on Facebook that night telling everybody I opened for Chris Rock. I've told that story a billion times.
But, oh, no, I've never heard it.
Yeah,
that's fantastic.
But it was... Yeah. But because, you know, it was a year and a half in, and I was just so, you know, just new. But also... Yeah. But so I'll have flashbacks of that night and other nights in certain rooms just based on, like, a feeling where I'll... take a certain turn, and I'm just like, oh man, remember that night when I did this and it bombed, and I went home and I didn't. But you know, or you know, the good with the bad, obviously. But
I'd say it's just as far as being experiential.
Yeah.
Trying to become a stand-up comedian on planet Earth is a very visceral, experiential thing. So you're going to have sense memory about it. It's not normal. It's heady stuff. It's the humiliation and the ecstasy. Maybe I can really do this. Those first early sets were like, I think I might be able to do this because it wasn't a given.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
My first set I killed and then I bombed 200 times. Very typical. And quit a lot. You know,
really.
So I don't ever forget that. Except I tell the audience now, I am a millionaire, multimillionaire. If I levitate the room or play to dead silence, it'll have no impact on my life or anything about me in any way. And my wife, I said, should I say that? My wife goes, yeah, you got to say that. Yeah, definitely. They love it when you say it because it's putting it in context. I'm out the other side. If it's this elliptical thing, and I was on a spaceship, I was flying to the center of the universe, and now I'm kind of in the outer. Netherreed, you guys are kind of in the center near the sun, mm-hmm. and you still are earning your... I try as hard. I'm actually more creatively inspired without that fear around me. Because all that does is tighten you up.
Yeah,
you
know? And it just makes you second-guess things that otherwise you wouldn't. Now you're at the point now where you're like, well, you're doing crayon drawings on Instagram.
Yes, watercolor crayons.
Yeah.
I do those just for fun on the side. Those are very just a little expression.
So you're going the route of Jim Carrey and
he's
George
really,
W. Bush.
He's really doing it though. Yeah. I mean, I would like to blow them up. And
you should
like that.
We'll
That'd
buy
be
one.
Fun. I like doing anything creative.
Yeah.
But as far as the stand up, I'm just trying to make it interesting for myself. And
do you listen to your sets afterwards?
You know, I was taping before the special. Right now, I just don't even want to think too much about it. I'm not...
You want night and set to be its own thing.
I'll make little notes like, oh, I can build on that, you know, mm-hmm. and it won't always work. But I think that, you know, it's just fun to be out the other side and not be as beholden to the whole structure of it. And I do think when I watch the greats of our generation, Chappelle and stuff, you know, mm-hmm. it's so much a confidence game. Because if you see the presence of the confidence in the eyes and all that stuff, and you know, I always say 99% confident is great, but the last 1% is bigger than the previous 99%.
Wow.
I don't know if you've had little moments where like, okay, I got this.
Oh yeah.
And
yeah.
then a couple bad sets or something gets canceled or some career thing or something fucks you up and then you just drop down a little bit.
Yeah.
But then you come up a little bit and it's such a confidence game.
Yeah.
At its core, because it's just, you just feel it when the comedian is not needy and just owns it.
And it's so strange to me that in order to get more confidence, we go and we pursue the thing that everyone is afraid of doing. Like, so many people are afraid of doing. Like, oh, I've got to get more confidence. So to get more confidence, I'm going to go stand up in front of strangers and yell at them.
Yes. It seems like magic to people who don't have the 3,000 sets under their belt. Like, how in the hell are you doing that?
Yeah.
And I get it. And when I've taken long breaks and get like, man, this is really weird.
It's always strange with that like that
stand
first
up.
Set
yeah.
that,
after 6 months
that
off.
That first set back is always like you're kind of getting your sea legs about you again.
Well, because they're all facing and looking and expecting, you know. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. It'll be interesting what happens tonight.
Oh, it's going to be great. Well, that's like hanging out with buddies, right? With Neilan and...
Yeah, you could do 10, 15 and he comes up. It's not... It is what it is, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Is there something about stand-up that Dex and Tom, your sons, have ever... Because they're now, what, 3-4 years in?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, I mean, is it getting to a point to where you feel like you can... You know, because I think we've all been around, like, younger comics, and we've been them ourselves, where you've said things maybe ahead of your time, where like, mm-hmm. I remember a buddy of mine a couple of years ago, he was maybe not even a year in, and he was just like... He was telling me, instead of phrasing it like... You know what I'm finding or what's neat to discover? But he was just like, stand-up's this. And I was like, he was saying a very blanket statement, like, you know, what you got to do is you can't worry about the crowd. And I'm like, dude, you've done maybe 9 shows. You know what I'm saying? But so have they gotten to a point to where you can entertain a conversation about, like if they even say, hey, Dad, we noticed this or whatever, like, will you?
Yeah, I mean,
Or do you still come at it of like, well, you guys need a little bit, a few more years to really have some perspective before I can
take
that
I do think that... there has to be a period of time, maybe 2 years, where you just do a crazy amount of sets.
Yeah.
Just to beat the fear out of you, mm-hmm. you know? And when I was just Mark Maron's podcast, he said even the 90s, and he was very successful by most metrics, he just saw the look in his eyes, and he goes, I have to get rid of that in order to go to the next level.
Wow.
And that you just have to do a lot of sets. Mm-hmm. The other thing is just clarity. You know, if you look at Seinfeld, clarity, look at Chris Rock, Chappelle, whatever premise they're working, you're not like, what? You know, it's just like crazy clarity.
They're focused and you know,
And also just sucking out words. You know, these are basics for the premise, mm-hmm. you know, and also if you're doing a bit where you have a premise, you're supporting the premise, and then suddenly the jokes take a little left turn, just do a little bit of another premise, go. And sometimes they say crazy things, just a little thing to guide the audience. Because a lot of times, all things being equal with a good audience, they'll shut down if they just don't get it.
Right.
So you just want to have that clarity. Unless you're, you know, trying to go out there in some acidity or offend them, you know, anti-comedy type stuff, which is fine.
This is the kind of stuff, and I don't know if you remember this moment or not, but like I remember I was in the same room as you, Robin Williams, and Mort Saul.
I do remember.
At the Throckmorton Theater. Yeah. And I was there with my opening act, Jeff Keith. And you, Robin, and Mort Saul are talking comedy. And I just remember grabbing Jeff Keith and going, don't say anything. Because it was just such a surreal, cool moment to have all you guys talking. And also great because here are three legends and you were talking about the same insecurities that I was having, that Jeff was having, that you have like throughout your entire career.
Well, we don't have the luxury, you know, when you see famous rock and roll bands do mm-hmm. their set list from the 60s or 70s, and they have to.
Yeah.
But it's like, oh man, really? Wow. That I mean, we you have to have a new special. Yep. I mean, you have to generate new stuff. Even, you know, it's just, mm-hmm. it's exhausting. But I was always extremely intimidated by Robin Williams and also Mort Saul's intellect, you know.
Yeah, who wouldn't be?
Yeah, but I remember you were going up that night. I didn't know you that well, and it's like, it was pretty packed.
Yeah.
And you were in the wings about to go up, and you start shadowboxing. And I go, are you nervous? And he goes, no, I love this. And then you went out and destroyed. Do you always do that in the wings, like just a couple
That night I had to because of the lineup, the absolute insane lineup.
Yeah, that is
that was you there. Did go out and kill.
How many years in the stand-up were you?
Jeez, at that point,
probably five or six years ago.
Five or six.
That's just enough to feel like you can do it, but just enough to then take in what's about to happen and go, can I do it?
Yeah.
Right? Where the confidence is like not totally at that point to where you just, but what am I going to do? Not go out there? So I'm going to have to.
You can't not take that shot.
Yeah.
You have to know. Like it always fascinates me when you see like at the Comedy Store or the Improv or whatever, someone will pop in. And go mm-hmm. on stage and just destroy. And then you'll see the comics in the back like, oh, I'm not going on now. I'm like, come on.
Yeah.
Come
this
on.
This is when you want to go on.
You have to go on now. Don't you want to be the person that goes on after Dana Carvey just destroyed the room and then you kill after that?
That's going to be me tonight. I mean, I'm going on at the end. It's after Jackie Fabulous.
Well, I'm trying to get Dana back to the Warriors game.
So you're going first. Yeah.
That's why, I mean, one of the coolest things I ever heard about me wanting to get back and watch the Warriors tonight is in Wayne's World 2, we were trying to get Ed McMahon. For your younger viewers, he was a famous sidekick.
I knew Ed.
Yeah. So the idea was Ed was going to do a cameo in Wayne's World 2, person, and the word came in, he was on his boat, and he was having a really good time, so he may not do it if it keeps this. If it's that nice on the boat. I thought, okay, that's a guy who's out the other side of show business.
Yes.
He's in this other realm.
He's just chilling on a boat. He goes, maybe I'll do it.
And he would take 20s, put 5 20s in an envelope, $100 bills, and just he'd pack his jacket with envelopes, and then went to hotels or restaurants. How are you? All right, what's going on? And he eventually had a more. He lost his house.
I know.
Didn't he go bankrupt right?
Yeah.
I remember Jay Leno going, he's got a mortgage? He's 87. You know, when has a mortgage in 87?
I did a sketch with him at his house where this.
Oh, wow.
It was, I'll show you. I'll send you the sketch. It was amazing. It was basically, I had my buddies do these special effects. It was basically, I was pitching him these ideas, these sketch ideas for him to do a sketch with me. And I'm pitching him all these ideas. He's like, nah, that's been done. It's been done. And I go, what about a sketch where a guy peels back a banana, but instead of a banana, there's an apple. So it's a banapple. And he goes, nah, that's stupid. That'll never work. Cut to, I'm on YouTube and I see Ed McMahon's banapple and I click on it and it's Ed going, and he peels the banana and they superimpose an apple and the banana. And then he just goes, what the hell? And then it comes to me and I go, McMahon!
God, that's so funny.
So stupid.
That he just wanted to use it and manipulated you?
All right, we're going to wrap this up.
I'm just trying to make sure we're not too late
for
the show.
We're about to wrap it up. But we want to close with...
requests, singing, whatever.
Well, last time you were here, you prank called the Thai restaurant as Paul McCartney, which was amazing. But we wanted to do a fake movie trailer for the Trump pee tape.
Okay.
So I'm going to do the movie voiceover, and then it's going to just, and they're just going to toss in, like, you know, like any trailer, like starring this person, and then, you know, the trailer, and then it can just be a quick line from the person who's in the film, but it's just, you know, it's a trailer.
Right. So, yeah, you'll just put it in. Yeah. All right, just cue me.
So here's the, this summer, find out what happens when the tape we've all been waiting for finally hits the internet. One man, two women, one Motel 6 in Russia.
Come on, look, I'm down here, okay? You got gravity on your side. Do what you gotta do.
Where do you want me to pee?
You know what you do. If I tell you where, the fun's all gone, okay? You do your thing, you do it good. Many people are saying you're terrific, okay? So just be yourself.
When everyone thought the tape couldn't exist, it did.
You know, here I am, okay? It was a lot more than I thought, quite frankly, okay? I need a towel, a hand towel, moist if preferable, all right? Okay? Don't tell Melania. Don't tell anybody. You're terrific. You're tremendous. Many people, excuse me, very sad. I love you.
Tony Danza is Melania. Hey, I heard there's a pee tape, baby. Is that right?
No, there's not. There's no such thing. I'm a germaphobe. That's crazy, okay? That's crazy stuff for crazy people. You're crazy.
You said you love me.
I don't love anything, okay? I love the way my hair lays on my skull, okay? That's what I love.
Michael Caine is Sarah Huckabee Sanders.
Listen, there's no pee tape. There's absolutely no P-tape. I know you guys say there's a P-tape. There's no P-tape. Who keeps saying there's a P-tape? I tell you, this is all fake news.
Like it.
Paul McCartney is the hotel manager who found the pee on the bed.
Well, it was a bit of a mess up there, you know. I knocked on the door. There was nothing, you know. I got in with the maid's key, right? And it's just, you know, everything's all wet and soggy, you know. And I said, we got to clean it up. We can't put someone in here with this sort of thing going on.
Liam Neeson and Glenn Close as the couple who was supposed to stay in that room.
Now, I have skills I've acquired in terms of cleaning up urine that make me a nightmare for a prostitute such as yourself. If you leave now, no harm will come to you. I'm not really angry, but I talk like this all the time.
Jeez, we're getting them all.
And the church lady as the woman who tried to help Trump find himself after such a horrendous adventure.
Oh, well, well, we've got picadillos, don't we? We've got little nasty habits, don't we? Well, next time we'll have an umbrella. Okay, Mr. Trump?
You're right. Forgive me, God. Forgive me, Jesus.
Too late.
This summer, the movie we've all been waiting for, Trump Pee Tape.
Be there. They said it couldn't happen until it did.
Oh, jeez,
my
geez.
God.
That's like a...
I'm gonna go see that movie.
Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. Boy, they're a lot of fun, huh? Why don't you subscribe on iTunes to this fucking podcast? Give them a 5-star rating so this midget and this Jew can feel good about themselves for a couple minutes. Also, get on your iPhone or Android and get the podcast app. You can also listen to it on Stitcher or aboutlastnightpodcast.com, where you can hear past episodes with great guests like Lisa Kudrow, Paul Feig, Kevin Nealon, Bob Saget, Dion Cole, Chris D'Elia, Adam Devine, Michael McDonald, Jaleel White, Bud Friedman, Steve-O, Harlan Williams, Tom Arnold, Ron Funches, Rick Glassman, Blake Anderson, Anders Holm, Jessamay Peluso, Joey McIntyre, and many, many more. I'm Tony Danza. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast. Good night. That's it, right? You got it? Sweet. Boy, it smells good in that booth, by the way. What kind of candle is that? Hanukkah Willow? Nice.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.